This past week marked 4 years since the arrival of the pandemic. 4 years. As we continue onward in the ever unfolding and frankly exhausting journey that is the endemic, coupled with the personal and societal happenings of all sorts, what are we to do? What are we to do with ourselves, with our communities, with the very stories we were raised to know as true, but have grown to realize don't fully encompass the truth? Big T. What are we to do in these moments of tenderness and calamity, frustration and joy, and the presence of both stillness and the hustle and bustle, that rat race of our lives? When so many things have either changed or need to change, what are we to do? As we live into these all too real questions, I offer up this morning's homily entitled Ministry at the Beginning of the World. If you are like me, maybe you remember the beginning of lockdown and all of the feelings that came with it. The anxiety and the loneliness, the anger and the sorrow. It must have been that first full week during lockdown as I recall struggling with my day-to-day routine. One such morning, I was looking out of my apartment window in Alexandria over Cameron Run, a tributary that feeds into the mighty and murky Potomac River. As I clutched my coffee cup to my chest, I blurted out, "I wasn't ready for this." My then roommate, Julia, sitting just across the living room, looked up from her phone and said, "Ready for what, Tyler?" I gestured to the window and said, "This. I wasn't ready for this. I was ready for the apocalypse, you know, the doom and gloom, the fire and brimstone, the gnashing of teeth, maybe a zombie or two. Not for a beautiful spring morning." There I was, struggling to make sense of the world as I had come to know it, as it began to fracture and fissure under the pressure of the pandemic and all that it brought with it. In those early weeks and months, I struggled. We struggled. We struggled as our loved ones became sick, as we cared for them and even became sick ourselves. We wrestled with the weight of the world as it played out on the evening news and on Instagram. We gave it the best that we could as we attempted to keep some semblance of normalcy. And as time went on, we began to hear and maybe even utter, and it's okay if you did, how we just wanted things to go back to normal, right? Back to the way things were before the virus, before social distancing, before masking, before wiping down our groceries and fighting over toilet paper, before air quality and purity, before inflation, and even before figuring out how to make multi-platform school and church work. You know, the before times. But is, as is our habit as creatures of habit, when reflecting on the past, we so often do so in dichotomies. That is to say, we think about the past events in two camps. You know, the totally good or the totally bad. But as I think back on those days, months, and years before the arrival of the pandemic, I am left wondering, what was so wholly good about them in which we would even want to go back to them to begin with? Now I know and I honor that when we say that we wished we would return to the before times, what we are doing is signaling how our hearts are now so weary and how we wish we didn't have to concern ourselves with the endemic and the total disruption it is still having on our lives today. And how so many times in those before times, and since then, I wonder, How many times have we asked ourselves, this is it? This is the end. Surely it is all done and over. We've asked ourselves that before. And casually naming a few, I can recall the chaos of Y2K. And that's for when the calendar hit the 2000 mark, for those who might not remember, right? And we partied like it was 1999. Yeah. Of course, there was the Bush administration, or the Obama administration, or the Trump administration. And then, of course, there was the pandemic itself, and the wars and the genocides, the rise and fall of the economy, the housing crisis, the endless counts of mass gun violence and natural disasters, and the list goes on and on and on. So many things. But as a religious people, as a people who routinely gather to wrestle with truth, both new and old, we are taught time and time again in so many ways that the ending of one thing is the beginning of something else. In our sacred story this morning from Genesis, the first of two creation stories, we hear the detailed motions in which God herself proceeds to bring creation into being by breathing life over the murky waters and separating them from what would become the earth. It is the creative imagination and poetic genius of the ancient Israelites as they sought to craft meaning out of the heat and force, the swirling gases and minerals that would become our galaxy. It places humanity not at the center, but as equal participants alongside the heavens and the earth, the shadowy waters and the moving airways, and of course, a multitude of animals, because we can't leave out the puppy dogs, can we? And with no preface, as the story says, with no explanation given, the plot line of existence begins in full order. This is what many of us were taught as the truth, after all. God creates, full stop. And when said more frankly, God creates from nothing. But when we pay more attention with both our hearts and minds and eyes to the words more closely, what we notice is that God himself didn't create the cosmos and everything that exists within it from nothing. But God created and crafted existence with what was already on hand, with that which already existed, the seemingly separate parts, maybe even the broken parts of the previous creation. There is no question. There is absolutely no question that we have each faced our own endings before. And maybe even some of those endings felt apocalyptic. But unlike what I was prepared for during those earliest moments of lockdown, and have since been reminded, endings can rarely be prepared for. And when they do arrive, they more often than not appear in ways different than how we expected them to be. And sometimes those endings and revelations don't come from outside forces, but are self-induced. And Cheers to the End of the World, Elba Morales writes, sometimes we orchestrate the end of our own worlds. The decision to leave a toxic job, saying yes to trusting a new love, and admitting that we need help. There is blessedness in new beginnings, no matter how difficult they may be or how they come about. And as change is the only real constant, we must meet those moments with as much heart as we can muster within ourselves and can assemble from those around us. For we can play an intentional role in our own new beginnings. As Dr. Elias Ortega, president of Meadville Lombard Theological School, says, facing apocalypse with courage and faith is understanding that it reveals other possible ways of being. of acting and living in the world while we still have time. In full truth, who we once were is no more. The world as it used to be has perished, for change is constant in the great river of being. For following life is death, and surely following death is life again. Water gives way, winter gives way to spring, and the setting sun gives way to the full moon, and the low tide follows once the water crests upon the shore. But there is good news, because there is always good news. The good news in all of this is that we are already wading through the waters, carving out new pathways and laying new foundations with old pieces every day already. But we must do so with intention and purpose. This intentional act of imagination requires that we honor all that has come to pass, to take stock of how previous iterations have shaped us, and then to manifest a new way that honors all of creation going forward. Here then, as Adrienne Marie Brown often says, we must create lives worthy of living. We must create lives worthy of living. Likewise, we must also organize communities worthy of being a part of, as the individual does not live alone in isolation, but is a single thread woven into the greater tapestry. For it is in these communities, much like the church is tasked with doing, that we become the co-creation lab of existence, creating ways of deep connection and well-being, bound together in care that can hold us through all the endings and new beginnings, the pandemics and apocalypses, the twists and turns still to come. As we move through this next chapter, and to this new world becoming, we must do so guided by faith anchored in clear and bold values. In my own journey as a UU, in my journey in ministry with other UUs in this area and around the globe, I detect that we will have to go forward with three guides for the journey ahead, lest we be tempted to fall prey to the ways of the before times. Now, I picked three because I know you use love three, right? So our first guide, slowing down to start small. Slowing down to start small. As we venture into this new world, let us go slow. Let us go slow and move with exacting precision. We have been trained to be and work at a fever's pace. While capitalism is crumbling, it is not yet dead in this new world. But the spirit of life, I believe, is much stronger. It is beckoning us, begging us really, to move differently, as we are beginning to realize that the god of death known in the form of free market greed has an offertory much too high to bear. By slowing down, we can begin to build up the life-giving pathways which meet the needs of today in more sustainable ways. No more quick fixes for the sake of convenience. Our second guide, relationships. Relationships. We have come accustomed to and have even began to expect that relationships should be connections of expediency, superficial at least, and vapid at most. In this new world, we must, especially as a religious community, we must let our relationships be both our teacher and our soccer. Relationships of deep meaning will challenge us to grow and will serve as our North Star as we strive towards liberation. And our last guide, depth over width. Depth over width. In the before times, we were instructed that we must always build wide, be wide, go wide, all which whispered, ignore the depths. But if the pandemic has shown us anything, such an approach to life, to our relationships, to our communities, to our churches, to our own spiritual journeys, width isn't sustainable, let alone useful, when the going gets tough. After all, how many of them close friends called on you when you had a need during that pandemic? When we engage the depths of the seas or the heights of the heavens, then we are able to know more fully of the nuances and complexities of life. There we can plant our roots deep in the nourishing earth as it provides sustenance and grounding. And there we can send our branches towards the heavens as it provides awe and inspiration. Slow down. Put your relationships at the center and go deep. Much like the roots of a tree. As elders and teachers of our tradition have reminded us throughout the ages, we are all ministers. Don't let this stool fool you, y'all. We are all ministers. We are all called to collectively carry the load of life together, for doing so makes the burden much lighter. In this new world becoming, following all that has perished, following all that has and even is still being lost, we must faithfully meet this apocalyptic moment as courageously as we can. We must meet this moment with what Walter Brueggemann calls a prophetic imagination. That is, we must call to mind, body, and spirit a vision of a world rooted in mutual care and generosity, where they are central to our being with one another. For this is how we come to know love, mutual care and generosity. We can shape the next creation, beloveds. We can shape the next creation, for we are God's partners, God's co-creators, love's partners, love's co-creators. For as the prophet Grace Lee Boggs once said, we must transform ourselves to transform the world. For truly, there is no better time than this, this moment, this morning, than to drink deeply of the mystery of transformation. And in so doing, may we prophetically minister to the beginning of the new world. So be it.